this is Three Bean Salad. I am Mike.
I'm Henry.
And I'm Benjamin.
And we have this podcast. And what we're going to give to you is a bean tasting menu with little chunks of bits of bean from the first series, so you can get a bit of an idea whether it's up your street or not up your street.
Yes. And if you're already a bean listener, we thought that this might be a good episode that you could send to a friend or recommend to someone else and say, why not try this one? It's a best of. We were going to call it the best of series one.
Felt quite grandiose. Yeah.
Yeah. So we thought that was a bit grandiose. So instead we went with the tasting menu metaphor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
To suggest that we're like a fine Michelin-starred restaurant.
Humble.
I would say we are of that quality. Am I banging up my drum bit too hard there to say that we're...
I think you're supposed to bang your trumpet or whatever it is from time to time when you've got a podcast. So anyway, you know, here it is.
And if you hate this, then I think you will absolutely loathe the podcast, because these are the best bits. If you absolutely hate this, I think it'd be dangerous for you to listen to the podcast, because...
You'd be incensed if you listened to the rest of it.
Please, please don't listen to the podcast if you hate this. If you dislike it...
Probably give it a miss.
Oh, no. Well, I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, because these are specifically chosen to be hopefully the more bearable chunks, right? So I think if you... It's very unlikely if you dislike it or if you're ambivalent to it that it's gonna be for you. But
yeah, I mean,
people can change.
People can change. People can change. That's a good point.
If you do dislike it, maybe you should start listening to the podcast anyway, and then during the course of listening to that first season, maybe you'll change, and by the end you'll actually like it.
And maybe you're the problem. It's. I mean, I don't want to get judgy or anything now because I don't know who you are, but it sounds to me like it.
We don't want to be judgy because it's horses for courses, yeah. Isn't it? You know,
it's horses for courses, but that doesn't mean that you can't have a horse that's a dickhead.
I suspect the people that would not want to listen to this podcast have probably already turned off this promotional recording.
Oh,
they've already
quite
gone.
A sad thought, isn't it?
But if you're still here, then it might be that you're going to be one of our new friends.
Listeners.
And shortly to be clients, because we are monetizing this process soon. And it's going to be all change. There's going to be paywalls. There's going to be corporate tie-ins.
There's going to be blackmailing.
There's going to be blackmail, extortion. It's going to be
the whole gamut.
A lot of cloak and dagger stuff.
There's going to be paywalls behind paywalls.
Yeah.
There'll be a pay ball you can get trapped in where you're actually literally surrounded, but you can barely move without paying.
There's going to be service charges. There's going to be unforeseen fines.
There'll be stealth taxes.
Doubling ground rents.
Interest.
Ground rents, hidden fines.
And blood money.
There'll be blood money. You'll get a call in the middle of the night. It'll be Three Bean Help Desk asking you for your bank details, so that we can refund you for episode 4. That sort of thing will be happening.
And if you're thinking, this sounds like a bit much, I don't want to get involved in this, sorry, it's too late. You've already listened to enough of this podcast that you entered the fee system.
We have all of your data.
Yeah. And again, we will bleed your assets dry. That's always been the game plan. It's not about... Because, okay... There's three models of capitalism, right? There's you buy a product. That was the one which lasted up until the late 90s. Since then, it's you subscribe to a service. Yeah, that's the new one. But the third one is you're just getting your assets bled dry. You're not getting anything back. You're just having your assets bled. And that's what we're aiming to bring in.
And you don't even know it's happening until it's far too late.
You don't know it's happening. It's a slow, steady drip of your assets.
And if you're in the Gulf of Persia, you should be careful, because we are also doing a little bit of piracy out there as well.
Yeah. Well, that's for
in between.
We need just
in between
to keep
series.
The cash flow and petty cash and so on stocked up. We have to. We will be. Yeah, have to do some hijacking.
Great. Well, with that in mind, here's some clips. They're kind of our favourite bits from series one. It gives you a sense of what the podcast is like. If you're a pre-existing beanhead, why not send it to a friend? And season two starts next week. See you then.
Bye.
Bye. Will Beezer emails and says, you ask at the end of the first podcast whether anyone had been attacked by a rhea. I can't say that I have, but I was attacked by a swan. Oh. It's my earliest memory. I was at Slimbridge Wetlands when I was about 3 or 4 with my nan feeding the swans some bread. And after I ran out of bread, I started throwing little stones at them with the same sort of bread scattering technique, thinking that the swans ate anything breadcrumb sized. The swans became violent, naturally. And I recall my nan staving off a group of about 5 or 8 swans by wielding her handbag and swinging it wildly around her head like a flail.
So she went full berserker. Good old nan. Good old man. And I just hope that she made it, right? I'm assuming that they all made it out of that.
Yeah, he doesn't say whether she made it.
She may have been that thing where she goes, you just save yourself, leave me here. Just go. Just go.
But never, I'll slow them down.
But never forget this moment. I know you're only 3, but just go.
Just make sure this is your first memory.
Try and make sure this, and also try and remember the name of the wetland centre. It's very important.
Really add texture to your anecdote.
I know you're only 3, and you haven't got a concept of a wetland centre. For you, the world is just a bunch of, you know, pictures and things that just, you know,
these days, the world is just a series of sizes, basically. Just different sizes you either throw or you throw at a different size thing.
The only thing you're really aware of is size differential. But try, if you can, to remember the name of the wetland centre. Go
now.
Oh god, they're on me.
As she finally pulls the pin from the grenade she's been keeping in her handbag all along. Eat this. Eat this, you queen's bitch.
Eat this. And there's, what happens? There's a great 1 second after she says that, isn't it? Eat this, yeah. Was it your queen's bitch? Pulls it, and there's 1 second where everyone looks at each other. The swans look at each other. She
there's
looks at the swans.
Nothing they
the swans
can do.
Look at her.
Yeah.
The owner of the wetland centre pops it.
He shuts up. He puts the blinds down on the ice cream. Out. He's got time to do that, but otherwise
and he jumps into the swan shaped pedalo to try to make his escape. But he knows he hasn't got time.
But he wants to create a sort of Viking burial for himself on the pedalo.
As a flaming swan shoots like a flaming arrow across the sky and lands in the prow, sets him alight.
Well, I'm sorry. I mean, Will obviously got in contact. What's happened? He sent us a nice story. You've slightly slagged off his anecdote technique by sort of slagging off the fact that he included the name of the wetland centre, which I thought was just a nice detail.
That was rock solid. That was rock solid anecdote technique, yeah. I think.
And then you've sort of hypothesised that maybe his nan died in a kind of flaming ball of... swans,
which if that was true, he would have a little tip for him is he's left out probably the most important part of the anecdote, which is not so much that the swans attacked him, but the sort of massive flaming ball of nan.
I mean, it's perfectly possible that if this happened, as you said, he doesn't actually know what happened to his nan. All he knows is she said go without me, and he's never thought to broach that in his head because he doesn't want to go there, he doesn't want to imagine what happened. But you've now filled in that gap and coloured it in lurid detail.
And he might go back to he might now for the first time feel ready to go back to that wetland centre.
Oh.
And
then discover that actually that she didn't blow them up or herself, but actually she went to live among them and she's been there ever since.
Yeah.
Nan?
Will?
It's a great first memory though.
My first memory, weirdly, is also at Slimbridge Wetland Centre.
Really?
Really?
Was it of an old lady blowing up 5 swans? It might be quite a lot of people's first memory.
And last. No, mine's very boring. It's just there was a bit inside where there was a fake kind of swan house. You could go inside and you could then sit on the swan eggs they'd made big. There were sort of big swan eggs that you could sit on. Mm. I very vividly remember this. They were quite smelly. There was like sort of hay in there. It was all quite shit and old. And that's my first memory.
You sat on an actual swan egg?
No, it was like a big fiberglass swan egg.
Oh, so a fake swan egg?
Yeah.
Did you have to dress up as a swan? Or were you trying to experiment what it would be like to sit on a...
Yeah, I didn't have to dress up. I think they were just trying to give you the
general feel of it.
Just imagine a 3-year-old me sort of grappling on a big egg.
I think it's a very weird thing to offer children to do, to sit on a swan egg and imagine you're a swan who's had given birth to some eggs and is keeping them warm.
I don't know, but the stuff they go for, man, do you know what I mean? I think it's like Magic Roundabout. I'm sure people, when they first pitched that, would have been like, this is absolute nonsense. What are you talking about?
Right, yeah, yeah.
But the stuff, the small ones in particular, that they genuinely go for, I could imagine that could be the sort of thing that makes no sense to an adult at all. Mm-hmm. But they're like, yay! I want to slip off the massive egg again and hurt my elbow, please.
I tell you what, I'd be so pissed off if I worked in that Slimbridge
Wetland Centre.
Swan Sanctuary Wetland Centre. If I was working on the staff there in the ideas meeting, and I would have pitched, I think, something
in
much,
the pitching
much
room. In the hot more, pitching room, yeah.
In the hot pitching room. I reckon, you know, I've taken interest in film, you know. I'd have come up with some good ideas, and some bloke could pitch that idea of sitting on the swan egg
with a reeking hangover. You know, that guy would have been absolutely still half cut, dressed in yesterday's clothes, bacon dangling off his face.
And I'd have been so confident that idea was bad that I would actually have openly slagged it off in front of the other executives.
Little did you know, they'd already commissioned the fiberglass eggs.
And I would have been so annoyed to see the kids lining up and really enjoying it.
Yeah.
While my Blade Runner meets Swan experience, right?
Which has decimated the budget
for the next decade.
Meaning the swans are on quarter rations.
Imagine it. It's a dystopian world. Which are the real swans and which are the cyber swans? So hard to tell, because the level of robot technology has got so good in the future.
And you go into a small suite where there's a robo swan who's doing a monologue about some of the really amazing ponds he's seen that humans can't even imagine.
Exactly. And there's a sexy hologram ad for a swan escort.
Yeah.
Who's being being sort of projected.
And everyone's eating
noodles.
Is
there a bit in Blade Runner where someone makes an origami swan?
Oh yeah, good point.
And that would come up in the meeting, though, wouldn't it? They'd be like, that's where you got the idea from, Henry. Yeah.
Exactly. And as soon as someone says that, I'll be like, yeah, well, see, it all adds up. and at that point, everyone in the room would be so excited. They'd be like, fuck it, okay. It doesn't matter about the canteen. We're putting all the budget into this.
Yeah.
People can bring their own lunch. We're putting all the budget into the Blade Runner Swan experience.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Dave, your egg thing, I mean, if you can find some stuff to make it, fine. There's no money in it.
Yeah, fine.
I mean, you can use that space over there with the stinky bit with the hay, but you know, I mean,
yeah.
Fast forward 18 months.
Yeah.
Both things are now open.
The queue's around the block for the swan eggs.
We've got...
Henry turns up at work and they're queuing out inside the Wetland Centre. Oh, yeah. He's like, oh my God, word's got round. And then he goes through. Oh,
I'll be thinking, thank God we got through those teething problems with the hover police car.
And all the deaths.
The three workers who died. Thank God it's not in vain.
Yeah, thank God we found the extra investment from Saudi Arabia for the £3,000 a day electricity bill that it takes. But never mind that it's now owned by a corrupt oil shake. It's a good workout, okay.
It's worth it because the people are turning up.
The children.
It's getting people excited about swans, and that's what this was all about.
In the meeting with the oil shake, you had to eat a swan. That was the galling
thing. To prove that I was serious.
And you know they were secretly filming it at the time. Yeah. They've got you by the balls. And then you finally step into the Wetland Centre.
Yeah.
And what do you see?
Little Ben Partridge, 3 years old, slipping and sliding.
Slipping and sliding, and the turnstiles for the Blade Runner experience are already beginning to rust.
Yeah, they've rusted on the same day.
Yeah.
We're only an hour in. They're rusting. Old crows and ravens are perching on bits of it, on bits of the set.
Yeah.
You get to the office, and on your desk is a letter with a cease and desist from Ridley Scott.
It's the one thing you forgot to do. You even wrote the letter and put a stamp on the envelope. You just forgot to post that bloody letter to Ridley Scott because he didn't know what his postcode was.
And the final insult is you go downstairs again. I've got off the little egg. I'm going home. I'm happy. You look in the little swan house and Ridley Scott's on the egg.
Yeah.
And he's just slipping off the egg going, Henry, where's my money? Where's my money, Henry?
Because as soon as you pay it up, I'm investing everything
into the film of the Sitting on the Swan Egg Experience, which is going to star Russell Crowe playing three different characters, the swan, the child, and the mother,
using and the egg.
CG. And the egg. Forgot to mention the egg. Using CG technology.
CG egg. He's not going to use a real CG big egg. It's not going to be in camera. He's going to use a CG CG egg.
Yeah.
It's never been done before, Henry.
Oh, yeah, and then he'll go, but Henry, just give me a bit of hope. He'll go, but Henry, you know what? We might use the set, actually, from your Swan Blade Runner experience. And I'll be like, oh, yeah? And he'll be like, yeah.
For firewood.
Firewood to create energy for the catering truck.
You know what? There's actually been some Rome news.
Since we recorded that?
Yeah. They're doing something at the Colosseum where...
They're bringing back gladiators.
I think they're bringing back gladiators. It's going to be huge. It's that thing about politics becoming more populist. I think that's... It was always heading that way. It's what the people
that's
want.
That's actually what they want, as it turns out. That's
it is genuinely what people
edging
want.
Edging towards slowly.
Yeah.
Watching a local councillor getting ripped apart by a tiger.
Exactly.
What are they actually doing in the Colosseum, Henry?
No, it's something like that. No, they're not bringing, but it's something like you're going to be able to know what it was like to be a gladiator by standing. I think it was something to do with standing on a special platform or something. They've built a special platform or something.
Oh, yeah. Then Russell Crowe comes out and beats you across the head with a stick.
Beats you to help. There's a gladiator experience where you get to feel what it was like to be a. I assume it was to be a gladiator or possibly to have worked on the film Gladiator. One or the other.
So you stand on a special platform, you put a VR headset on,
yeah.
And then animated...
Visit Russell Crowe's Winnebago.
His character tells you to go and bring a bacon panini to Russell Crowe and look sharp about it and make sure it doesn't get cold.
Where's my panini?
You hear that from far left.
Really visceral experience.
Will you get the right panini in our interactive Russell Crowe panini challenge? Don't make him angry. Experience the difficulties they had getting the light right on certain days in our Join the Cameraman experience.
Ooh, this intermittent cloud passing overhead. What are they going to do?
Listen, mate, if we don't get the right fucking angles, I'm going to fucking kill a lot of you.
This is why I said we should have done it in fucking green screen. Fucking plans. And where's my fucking panini?
Put on our special gladiator outfit with a sort of scabbard for the panini.
That's what Russell Crowe insisted, that his runner on that was dressed as a gladiator with like five scabbards, each of which had a different panini flavour in it.
A sort of thermos technology panini scabbards.
Exactly. Kept it piping hot.
Got me piping hot all day, mate. Yeah. You don't understand what actors have to go through.
Do you remember, Mr. Crowe?
I want a fucking salami panini
do
now.
Do you want to make a panini later on for when you want it later on?
No, just get it out of your fucking scabbard. Why do you think I have the fucking scabbard designed for you, mate?
I'm afraid we're out of salami. Would you mind if it was a prosciutto panini?
That's in your quiver. You got a fucking salami quiver on your back, mate. Yeah? You got salami. Listen, mate, how many times do I have to explain this to you, right? The salamis are in the quiver, the paninis are in the scabbards, yeah? It's not rocket science, mate.
It was actually just a coincidence as well. In every film he filmed previous to Gladiator, he had a runner dressed as a gladiator with scabbards full of paninis. It just happened to...
Yep.
Yeah. It just happened to seem more the apt
clock
when he was
struck twice.
He actually had a bit of a crisis of confidence about it, and he talked to his agent about that. He was like, oh, this is the first time, mate. I'm just a little bit worried because, you know how I always have a runner dressed as a gladiator?
Of course, Russell, yeah.
Yeah, you do get through them, Russell. They don't tend to last, but yeah, carry on anyway, yeah.
And then after 6 months, I murder them. Yeah. Well, look, that was fine on LA Confidential, right? It was fine on all my previous films. It was fine on the one where I play a skinhead, LA Confidential. Yeah. Well, I'm just worried with Gladiator, right? It's just a bit weird. You know, people are going to think it's a bit weird because the film actually is about a gladiator. Sorry, I've got a couple of olives in my throat, mate. It's my breakfast.
They've come from his breakfast slingshot. He's just slung them in. He slung them in a bit hard.
He went down the wrong way. You know what I mean? He does love, listen, as long as I've got a hot-boiled egg in a trebuchet lined up, ready to go, 5 a.m. every day, I should be fine.
You know the scene I like in those films? It's the scene the night before they're about to go in the spaceship and they have a nice barbecue with their family in a kind of Florida sort of holiday home they've all been moved to. Yeah. And they have a little beer and they look up at the stars. And obviously there's a cloudless sky which they look up into. And it's just the best scene.
They look at the giant asteroid that's hurtling towards them. We'll be having ribs on that asteroid. Save some coleslaw for me.
It's time for the ultimate barbecue.
Well, that's the guy, the one who's going to die always says that, doesn't he? What? He'll say...
He'll have a monologue about coleslaw.
he'll go...
Yeah. I tell you what, Susan... I'll be seeing you on April the 23rd.
Is that voice again? It's back.
I'll be seeing you.
He sounds like he's coming down with something. Probably shouldn't go.
And I can't wait to watch our son Robert grow old.
Not Robert, but Rubbert. It's a hyphenated name. A name after his two grandfathers, Rob and Bert. Good old Rob Bert. Oh, I love you, Rob Bert. Be good to your mother, Rob Bert.
We didn't know whether to name him Rob or Bert, so we split the difference and we called him New Young Rob Bert. And I want to watch Rob Bert grow old and
play mini league.
Mini league and play.
On the 4th of July. And cook his first pecan pie.
Oh. And make pecan pie and pumpkin pie. Or peekkin pie. Like his namesake, Rob. He'll combine the pies like we combine the grandparent fathers in his name. I want to watch him make love to his wife. I want to watch everything in his life. I'm going to... invest in technologies and things that I can monitor him, and I've already scoped out a nice home he could settle into with secret passages around the bedroom, bathroom, basement. It's essentially, it's one-way glass tubes. I watch everything, and then I want to watch him die. I just want to watch everything.
I don't want to miss a thing. Take it away, Steve Tyler.
I've got a cable here, which is on death's door, right?
Yeah.
It's literally hanging by a thread.
Isn't that new with the new microphone, though? Why is that?
This isn't new microphone, mate.
Isn't it?
I've been using this Yeti for donkey's years. Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
Why? Whatever for?
Well, do you think this is a new...
I assume there's a pandemic microphone. I assume everyone got microphones and puppies in the pandemic, and that's...
No, it's actually... I got it ages ago.
What, you've been recording on it, Henry?
KFC, mate.
Did you get the KFC gig?
KFC went through this. I got the KFC gig, yeah.
Did you? Sweet. Yeah. Did you?
Yeah. Hello, kids. I'm the Colonel. Welcome.
Are you sure it was actually on the other end of the emails? Not some kind of fetishist.
Yeah, all I had to do was cover myself in a special mixture they sent me in the post and take a load of photos. No, I did get the KFC gig, and it all got recorded through this baby.
What was that for? Like radio spots or TV or?
TV. No, it's not mega massive, but it was good. But it was, it's not a big thing, really, do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean?
It's a springboard, isn't it, really?
Yeah, these things are always a springboard. It's a stepping stone.
Have you got the kind of contract where if you now said anything negative about KFC on this podcast, people would turn up at your house and tear your clothes off?
Or chicken in any way, shape or form. That's where tarring and feathering comes from, isn't it? It's from people who've besmirched
the colonel.
It's the chicken that feeds them.
Yeah. No, I just think they're great. Just a great bird with loads of uses. Do you know what I mean? They're economical, they're safe, they're clean.
Friable.
They're friable, and you get different things out of them. Food, clothes.
Giblets.
Leather.
Yeah, my chicken leather driving gloves always turn heads, I find, on the A303.
Well, they're so hard wearing, aren't they? Because they've... And did you keep the talons? Because if you keep the talons on them...
Only on the left-hand side. Yeah, excellent purchase on the gear stick.
Exactly.
Yeah. They said it couldn't be done, but I've recently purchased a pair of chicken leather trousers.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, you must never wash them, apparently. That's where I went wrong with my chicken leather.
Oh, is that right?
Chaps. Yeah. Absolutely ruined them. Yeah, just wipe them down with a damp cloth. That's all
you can't wash them. Basically, the way to maintain chicken leather products is... Think about how would a chicken deal with it? Because essentially, it's an organic, you know, it's a live product. The chicken's dead. The chicken itself is brain dead, but the molecules are still
the leather molecules.
the leather molecules are still alive. That is true. Anyway, if you buy leather off anyone in a shop, they always love they love going on about how the leather has to breathe. Treat it with a special cream that then they sell you add-ons, but you know, leather is alive. The chicken is dead. There's no brain controlling it anymore. It doesn't have a central.
Its organs are still, I mean, it's been intubated and everything, so it's still functioning from the neck down and could be used for transplants as and when.
Exactly.
Exactly. But it's not sentient anymore.
It's not sentient. But how does a chicken clean itself? Just do the same thing.
I think they have a dirt bath, don't they? Is that a thing?
They have a dirt bath.
They have a dirt bath or a disgruntled farmer. Powerfully hoses them down in a rage when it's angry with its children.
Yeah, but the power hose by an angry farmer who's going through some issues. Mm. Or dirt bath. So just put it on a 40 cycle, but you just, instead of conditioner, you just pour in like two handfuls of dirt.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you should be fine.
But that's the challenge with the trousers, why they said it couldn't be done, was because obviously if you got 40, it takes about 40 chickens to make a pair of chicken leather trousers.
Yeah.
If you put 40 chickens just in a box together and left them for half an hour, there'd be absolute carnage.
Yeah. Leave it for 45 minutes, you got yourself a pair of leather trousers.
Well, that's it.
Yeah.
So patience is key.
But then the problem is, as Henry says, the molecules are still the same. They're still the live chickens. So you will get a situation where the trousers will try and reject each other. They'll fight. Yeah. The different bits of leather will clash.
And peck your dick off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And a lot of the deep brain stem stuff, which is just instinctual, will still happen. So, for example, if you're wearing those trousers and a fox is nearby...
They'll go nuts.
The trousers will go absolutely nuts. They'll go berserk. Yeah. And you just need to get them off as fast as you can.
Yeah.
Which is why I suggest, always say, wear chicken leather trousers with slip-ons, because you want to slip those shoes off, get those trousers off as fast as you can. Because imagine 40 chickens, right, in a coop, and a fox goes in, they go fucking berserk.
Yeah.
Now imagine those chickens are all attached to your legs, 40 of them.
Or if that does happen, at least make sure you've got yourself down to the discotheque or on a street corner and you've got a little hat out front, and because you're going to be busting some fresh moves.
Make it work for you.
Yeah, monetize that. Always try and monetize it.
If you can, make it work for you. Yeah, you'll be bopping hard.
What kind of fly do you have, Mike, on your chicken leather trousers?
No fly. Just goes all the way up.
Just the chicken mouth. Isn't it the chicken mouth you have at the front?
Mine's the classic chicken head, yeah.
The chicken head.
I've got a pair of chicken leather braces that I used, quite wide, to keep them up.
Yeah.
With sort of beak clasps.
But what I always say to people is, with a pair of chicken leather trousers, it's an investment piece, and these are trousers for life.
Oh, mine belonged to my great grandfather.
Yeah,
yeah. He wore them when he was a Catholic missionary in sub-Saharan Africa many years ago.
The breathability would have really helped him there, because with the humidity levels,
they're warm in the cold, they're cool in the hot.
They're cool in the hot.
Yeah, Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is why it's a superior leather.
But also, you can dress them up and you can dress them down. Yes. So you can absolutely wear them for a formal event. You could wear them for the Oscars, you know, that kind of thing, wedding.
Yeah.
But then similarly, if you want to slub around in your chicken leather trousers on a Sunday evening at home, just get them on. They work perfectly well.
It's leisure leather, isn't it, when it needs to be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just such a great product, isn't it? And it's so great to see young people.
Well, these days, increasingly, you see young people wearing them, you know, kayaking.
Yeah.
And just young people getting into chickens generally.
It's just good to see, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like a new generation.
Just look up. Look up. Get off your screens. Look up. Look at a chicken. Yeah.
Look as it arcs above. Soaring on the thermals above you. Flocks of them.
And to watch them, it's actually around this time of year to watch them migrating.
Incredible.
You know, to watch them flying in formation as they migrate down to, over to Cape, well, the Cape of Good Hope, isn't it? Cape Cod, all the different capes.
Cape Haddock.
Yeah.
There's
Canaveral.
And also where I'm in Devon, we've just had the lovely, lovely event that happens every 17 years where 14 million chickens have just burst out of the soil.
That's right.
Have finally hatched out and have taken flight.
Always mean to try and go down everywhere. And see that. It's one of those things
a combination of getting a nightmare, you know, and the roads are absolutely, you've got to be ready for it, really.
Because they've been gestating down there for, how long is it?
It's 17 years.
17 years they've been gestating.
I'll get you down next time. Or you come down, bring Bluebell.
Oh, and, I'd love to do that.
We'll have a crack in time.
Did you manage to grab any virgin leather, as they call it?
Well, the prices, because if you get it from one of the vendors, A, it's ridiculous, and B, it's not always the actual stuff itself.
I know, but it's important to the local economy here. We did manage to get, we got about 4 pints.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Four pints of leather.
And you weren't tempted to bring your own, just bring a Stanley knife and...
No. We're treating it. We're at the moment, we're drying it out.
Yeah.
And we're lathering it. And then we're going to make a nice new piano case for it.
Oh, that's nice.
For, you know, holidays and stuff.
Because there's the long running ethical argument, isn't there? It's like, obviously the leather is more supple if you get them when they're just out of the ground.
Yeah.
Mm. But there's also that feeling that it's a bit of a shame that something that just takes for 17 years then immediately turns into trousers.
Yeah.
I don't mind that. I don't mind that, and I don't think the chickens mind it. What I do mind is the chicken diggers. I do object to people who come down here prematurely.
That is disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and they hoik them down from underneath, don't they? So they get underneath them.
Yeah, yeah,
because they
put down a special stick with a sort of barbed hook on the end, and they dig out the prematurely.
But
chickens.
The leather's not ready, Mike. The leather's
not ready. It's very,
gelatinous.
It comes to pieces. It's just a gelatinous leather. You can always tell. It's too much sheen to it.
Yeah.
And who launched it? Who launched it this year, by the way? Because I know they always get someone.
It was the Lord Mayor of Columpton.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Which is, as you know, is an honorary role. And this year it was given to Bruno Mars.
Bruno, of course, only wears chicken leather in all of his music videos.
Well, actually, the rumour is he deliberately... They release a fox into the studio.
Oh, to get him dancing?
To get him dancing, because obviously the chicken molecules start panicking and
that's the secret.
Gives him a little
that's
bit extra.
How he does it.
But look, even if you can't afford a pair of, not everyone can afford, you know, a full chicken leather suit, whatever, just get a chicken leather wallet. I've got a chicken leather wallet. and it's got a lovely little thing, which is the beak. They've kept the beak on.
Yeah.
And it dispenses the coins. So you can pour the coins out of the beak.
Does it still have the voice box?
It still has a voice box, yeah. So it does a little gargle as you turn it over. Obviously, they've only got a chicken only has 20,000 crows noises in it. So eventually, it'll run out. But I'm enjoying it at the moment. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Well, similarly, my 40th, I got a chicken leather strap, and the beak squawks the time.
Oh, that's clever.
But only on the hour it can do it.
Yeah,
12 squawks, 12 o'clock, and so on. But yeah, that'll last me a good few years. Were your posters, your teenaged posters?
Oh, that's good. So I had, I got into comics at a point, and I had loads. The idea of it now is so embarrassing to me, But I had loads and loads of Batman posters that I thought were incredibly cool. And you know, when you're a teenager, it's all about, like, I'm into this thing and other people who are into it might realize I'm into it too and think I'm good. So that's why you get into t-shirts so much. T-shirts with the band that I'm into on. And you really hope that one day somehow you'll connect with someone, essentially. You'll be on a train or...
You'll signal and to the right tribe.
It may even be a band you don't particularly ever listen to or like.
Yeah, it may very well be that. And what you're hoping will happen is, across a crowded train, the most beautiful woman in the history of Earth will see the t-shirt band that you're into.
Oh, yeah.
And she will waft across the crowded commuter train and sweep you up in her arms and carry you away and live with you, even though you are 14 years old and she works in the city.
It's quite a maternal element to that fantasy.
It's very revealing, Henry. I may have revealed too much. But basically, no, you want connection, right? You want to signal what you're into. It's part of your identity, isn't it? And posters are really important when you're a teenager. It's like, I'm into this, but and also I'm going to publicly say that I'm into it, so that hopefully other people who are into it will make love to me.
Oh, there's a bit of curation going on, yeah, because you're imagining someone is going to come round at some point.
Yeah,
you know.
But the thing that was so pathetic about it was that for someone to notice my Batman posters, they'd have to befriend me and come into my room. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's the long game, isn't it?
It's such a long game.
It's the long game. Especially with a city professional.
Exactly, especially in her late 30s. A city professional.
It's very unlikely you're going to be able to groom someone two or three times your own age.
Exactly.
A Deutsche Bank executive that you're leading into
a
your teenage
Deutsche
bedroom.
Bank executive.
A multilingual French economist.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm doing my
A-levels. God. You also like Batman.
you know, Henry, you're only 17 years old. And I am an incredibly successful, physically extraordinary specimen of a German banking woman. Yeah, I live my life every day, meetings. Oh no, every day another man with a big heavy watch and multiple cars. Oh, I'm bored of them, Henry. It's you that I like, you with your folders, your A-levels hanging over you. And
your new pubes.
Your freshly minted pubes. And, you know, I like that you respect your family. You still go on holiday with them. I like that. Yeah, I like that you still have pets, small pets in the cage, in your room. I like this. A lot of the men I'm meeting, Henry, in Dusseldorf, you know, downtown in New York, I do a lot of international meetings. They're not like you, Henry. You know, that
they don't have a gerbil that they've named after their favorite wizard.
None of them. You know what, Henry? A lot of them don't even have a favorite wizard. Oh no! But that's what I did. On some level, I did think that was going to happen if I got enough of the right Batman posters up.
The chance to, well, you got to be in it to win it, right?
That was the time I really got into something enough to go, I want to live in a kind of igloo made of this stuff.
I think you're the only person I know whose teenage fantasy involves being on a commuter train as well.
You know, it's just the grind, isn't it, Henry? Every day I'm here on my way to an expensive meeting, you know, and every day I've got so much perfume on me and I've got so many metal things on my handbags. I've got so many handbags, the little clinky metal things that keep it together, you know, Henry? And I get so tired.
It's teenage levels of research as well, you know, the expensive meeting, because that's what they have in cities, they have expensive meetings.
And Henry, your hands get so bored and hot and on the way into work, you know? And then I see you, Henry, there, sitting there, and I know that you've got to, like, Detective Comics, which is the best, when Norm Breyfogle was illustrating Batman. So this is issues 375 to around early 400s. Frank Miller did some of the writing.
Oh, and I see you've doodled it's your own so version good. Of the Joker in your little notebook. Is that your own doodle? You illustrate so beautifully, Henry.
I love the way you draw the Batman and all the villains. You know them all, Henry.
Oh, and look here, you've invented your own little car. Oh, it's your own special superhero car you've invented.
It's called Henry's special mega car.
Oh, it can fly and go underwater and go invisible.
It can go to so many places, Henry, that I'm feeling very, very, very hot now. You know, that kind of thing. Is that, yeah.
As a teenager, I largely lusted after other teenagers, I think, rather than professional women.
I think, to be honest, the truth is I went to mainly boys' schools until girls didn't come in until quite late on in my schools. And I just developed an entirely bizarre fantasy woman in my head who I was in love with, who was some sort of German banking commuter.
So it's lack of exposure rather than an old knob on young shoulders.
We've also had a lot of emails from people suggesting topics.
Uh-huh.
This is from someone called Spurbs.
Good old Spurbs.
Old Spurbsy.
Hey, Mike, Henry, and other guy.
I like that. Hey, Spurbatron. I'm a big fan of Spurb.
Yeah, Spurb is really...
absolutely fantastic.
We should maybe give Spurb his own...
It should be Mike, Henry, and Spurbs.
Oh, no.
Because at least Spurbs, people will be able to remember that name rather than...
New Bean. Yeah. We've got... Guys, we have a bean changeover.
The bean reshuffle.
Play the theme.
Spurbs writes, it's been a dream of mine since childhood to become a middle-aged British comedian.
Oh, okay.
Despite not being interested in comedy or being British.
Okay.
You're regretting subbing in Spurbs now?
Yeah, Spurbsy
I'm enjoying Spurbs.
He's someone who very much... He's a risk taker, isn't he, socially? I think with Spurbsy, I think...
And I think I'm that man. I'm enjoying Spurbsy immensely. I'm enjoying his bold gambit. I want to hear more from Spurbs.
Well, he's about to deliver a very backhanded compliment, so here we go.
Oh, not Eve already? Bloody, he's negging us, isn't he?
Okay. You're falling for it, boys. You're absolutely falling for it. Now I can live that dream vicariously with three indistinguishable voices with meandering, mildly funny conversations.
That is as backhanded as it gets, isn't it?
Spurbsy, okay. Spurbsy has pulled off quite a trick here, which is...
He separated Ben from the pack early doors. This was a clever move.
Ben from the pack early doors. He's an absolute master.
You realise I was the weakest of the herd.
It certainly drew me in.
I am now 100% dependent on Spurbsy for my any sense of self-worth or... I mean, that transference has happened 100% now.
Yeah.
It's psychologically that it would take years of work to separate Spurbsy from my sense of self.
To de-spurb.
De-spurbing at this point, it would almost take so long that it's safer, quicker, be easier for me and the people around me, the people that love me, if I just get married to Spurbs or... just become part of his entourage. I think it's the only healthy way forward at this point. It just feels easier.
Touché, Spurbs.
Henry, are you ready for the final line of the email? I think is the coup de grace when it comes to...
You're not even finished. Oh, well, no.
It's not even finished. What has Spurbs got in store for us now? Okay.
He's sealing the negging deal here, I think. So Spurbs then goes on to recommend something we might want to talk about. He says, anyways, talk about mermaids or something. Who cares? Love, Spurbs.
Oh, the coup de Spurbs.
Right. So... the coup de Spurbs. Obviously, mermaids is the next topic we're going to be discussing. I don't think we need to... Yeah.
But we know it doesn't matter. At least we know it doesn't matter.
But it's going to have to be mermaids. Spurbsy. I tell you what, I'm glad I don't work in a kind of office space with Spurbsy sitting opposite me. Because, do you know what I mean? Because every day you'd go into work just thinking, what is Spurbsy going to think? What's he going to say?
What's he going to make me do today?
What's he going to make me do today?
Is he going to make me get into trouble?
Because he's a powerful psychological manipulator.
He's got a vice-like grip on me, certainly.
So it's been... I just want to say, guys, I've really enjoyed these two episodes we did together.
Yeah.
I look back on it fondly. I guess change the email address. Change the email address password and I won't be able to look at it.
Yeah, and it'll be Spurbs... What should we call it from now on? Spurbs' World?
Spurbs Legend 1, I reckon.
Spurbs Legend 1?
Yeah, probably.
Ben, you need to... Well, if I was you, what I would do is pack everything you can into a rucksack and just do the long walk. So it's 5 years. You need to just walk. Just keep walking around the country. And it's basically what you're doing is you put... If I understand Spurbsy and what makes him tick... Which obviously I have no right to speculate, but the Spurbsy type, I think you need to go, you need a 5-year walk in the wilderness and then prostrate yourself in front of Spurbsy. Show him the sores on your face, the sores on your arms and legs.
Yeah.
And just hope that Spurbsy takes pity on you.
It makes you a saint.
And even then, there's only a 30% chance that he would acknowledge me even being there.
The most likely response is Spurbsy will not attend the meeting, even if it's on Zoom. you'll have wasted those 5 years in the wilderness. At that point, all you can do then is double up and do 10 years in the wilderness. Bearing in mind that every stretch you're in the wilderness, the chances of Spurbsy then acknowledging it when you finished it go down. But the length of time you have to spend in the wilderness goes up.
Yeah, you've got to lean into it even as Spurbs slowly withdraws.
So you're an exponential Spurbsy. Yeah, it's Spurbsy wilderness.
It's the Spurbs penance.
And then that will go on until my dying day. Then he will finally turn up at my funeral and ruin it.
Yeah. Yeah.
With a kind of backhanded eulogy.
He'll do a backhanded eulogy. And little things like at your funeral, I'm guessing he'll have loosened some of the legs of some of the pews, or he'll have people that will have loosened them for him. A lot of the pews will be just wonky enough that people can't really focus on your passing and how much your life has meant to them and stuff, because just all the pews will just be slightly off kilter.
I think he'll have loosened the lid on the coffin so that when it's being put down into the hole, the lid slips off to reveal me. I'm lying face down.
Yeah.
And I'm clothed apart from I've got a bare ass. he's put me in chaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
He also will have at some point got off with every person in the congregation in their distant past, but they'll have only recognised him quite late on.
And he'll play that in on a screen. He'll have a little screen and a projector that he'll set up.
Well, him getting off with every member of the congregation
over a 20-year period.
And like, even before he says it, people will be thinking, we've been spurbed here. But even if they're not thinking it, he will then say,
just for the record,
you've been, just reckon, you've all been spurbed.
Yeah.
Big time. And then techno music plays. There's a lot, there's lasers. Actually, it gets quite fun at that point. Yeah.
It wasn't a church at all. The walls fall away. You're actually in a water park.
You're in a water park.
He releases 1,000 cassowaries into the room.
At that point, people are actually, they're on their feet, they're dancing. You know what? This has actually been quite fun. This is a memorable day. There's energy. People are getting off with each other now. Ben, members of your family are getting off with each other.
Yeah. If they're not being torn to shreds by a cassowary.
thanks for going there, Henry.
Look, it's Spurbsy, right? It's what Spurbsy can,
it's the Spurb effect.
Spurbsy can free in people. But then the final thing, this is the amazing bit though. The music cuts down, right? Blackout. Spotlight. The corner. It's Ben. You're alive.
was I Spurbsy all along?
Spurbsy. Yeah. You were Spurbsy, but you haven't even finished saying I was Spurbsy all along before a snooker cue down your throat. It's Wozniak. He was in the loo.
I missed all of this.
He's missed all of this.
So hang on, why is Wozniak put a snooker cue?
I always bring a snooker cue with me to any sort of live event ceremony.
You always
just in case there's trouble.
Why have you attacked me with it?
I didn't know.
And you know what? To this day, he can't actually answer that question. No.
It's just
even
instinct.
Under questioning by Emily Maitlis.
And I would admit fully that I did it.
Oh yeah. He knows that. There's 40 CCTVs from different people's eyes that are hanging off from Casper attacks.
It's completely indisputable.
Yeah. Right. Well, I just want to say, thank you for your email, Spurbs. It's personally quite exciting to read the email that is the beginning of that journey. You know, we know that we've got that to come.
Yeah.
And it's just nice to be, it's nice to have something to look forward to, really, I think. And we now know what's going to happen. How long is that going to take? 40 years?
Roughly,
yeah,
I'd say. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a 40-year cycle. Once Spurbsy engages with you, or once Spurbsy's in your life, it's a 40-year cycle till you're free of Spurbs and dead.